Welcome to My Dog Hunts Podcast. I'm your host, Randy Shepard. I'm the owner and founder of MyDogHunts.com. My Dog Hunts is an online and personal chronicle of your upland bird dog's hunting career. I'd appreciate it if you'd log on to MyDogHunts.com, maybe make some noise there, and try to wake things up. No more traffic than My Dog Hunts attracts. I think I should have just named it the Lone Wolf Club. This is installment number 2 of my Dual Limit podcast, and today's podcast is going to be on ruffed grouse and fall turkey. Primary hunt I'm going to speak about today is what I call my gunny sack day. This would have happened in about 1982, I would guess. I still had Pitch, my female black lab. I started out the hunt in Iowa, and this was back when I had extremely high expectations from every hunt. It was typical of me to plan on hunting ducks in the early morning, ruffed grouse and woodcock during the day. If it wasn't too late in the season, I'd hunt woodcock. Well, okay, I didn't really chase woodcock. I shot woodcock when the opportunity presented itself. And then some years, I would pick up a fall turkey tag. A fall turkey in Iowa at that time was more of a meat hunt, a sport hunt. It was typical for me to see, anywhere from 3 to 6 or 7 flocks of fall turkey in a day of rough grouse hunting, oftentimes walking right in the middle of a feeding flock. There were very few bald eagles present at that time, so you saw a lot of turkey feeding out in the open fields. It was common to see several flocks in the middle of the day, feeding in open fields. Once bald eagle population rebuilt, it was rare to see turkey feeding out in the open. 2 different occasions, I saw eagles harassing turkey, swooping at them. The hens would puff up their chest and stand as tall as they could and beat their wings when the eagles would swoop down, sometimes 5 or 6 feet over the top of them, and the eagle would just kind of hang there. I never saw eagles actually attack the turkey. I was actually surprised the last few years that I hunted rough grouse that I hardly ever saw a flock of turkey out in the open again. That's when I made the association that, okay, there's eagles out here now, and that's keeping the turkey in under overhead cover. Back to this gunny sack day, my typical high expectations. I carried a dozen mallard decoys up the ridge, and I had a fall turkey tag. I believe this is the first fall turkey tag I ever purchased, and it was my first hunt. And I fully expected to shoot a turkey and at least a 3-bird limit of rough grouse, and I knew I would pick up 1 or 2 or 3 ducks. This particular ridge that I was hunting on was private, but I'd had permission to hunt on it for a long time. There was a series of 4 stock dams on it, dirt tanks. It was rare that if the water wasn't froze, that there wouldn't be either mallards or wood ducks or both on one or more of these ponds. They seemed to kind of rotate. There was never any one particular pond that always had ducks, but between the 4 of them, you could find a bird or two on 1 or 2 of them. So when I got there, I'd also noticed the last couple of trips that I was seeing more than occasionally seeing flocks of mallards were landing in the pick corn. So this time, I wasn't entirely sure what to expect, so I put 6 decoys. I propped them up in the pick corn, probably 200 yards away from the dirt tank I was hunting on. And then I put the others on the biggest of the ponds, which still wasn't very big. It was probably 30 feet by 30 feet. I hid under a low bush on the dam itself, and I had Pitch. We sat under that bush for probably the first 30 minutes of light. Before we had our first small flock of mallards come in, there were probably 8 or 10 birds in that flock, and I picked out 2 drakes and shot those. And this was in the lead shot days. This would have been pre-steel shot. I shot the 2 drake mallards. They both fell dead. Pitch didn't have any trouble bringing those back. And half an hour later, we had a flock of wood ducks come in. But I've always been species-specific about pretty much everything I hunted. We were on the point system then, and drake mallards were 35 points. Wood ducks, I think, were still 90. Considering that I started the day with 2 drake mallards, I fully wanted to finish with another drake mallard. I held off on the wood ducks and I didn't shoot. In the meantime, I noticed there was a flock of mallards working the cornfield, and they were right over my decoys. Eventually, I saw them set their wings and glide down. From my vantage point, it looked like I didn't see them come back up again, so I was pretty confident that they had just landed in my decoys in the pit corn. I knew that Pitch hadn't perfected the belly crawl heel, so I tied her to a bush on the edge of the timber below the dike, knowing that she wouldn't be able to see me leave. When she quieted down, I walked over the top of the bank, and then I hustled along the edge of the timber out of her sight because I knew if she saw me, she'd start barking and wailing. I got about parallel with where I thought the ducks had landed, and I began to crawl on my hands and knees to the crest of the hill. And when I got just to where I could see over the top, I was about 20 yards from a bordering fence on a standing bean field. When I looked out, I could see these black periscopes popping up and down in the beans. And the only thing I could think of is they looked like stick bobbers in a crappie hole. They would bob up here and then pop up over there, and all of a sudden it dawned on me that they were turkey. And they were working their way towards me into this pit corn. So I just hunkered down, waiting for them to pop out in the open. They'd be 20 yards away, and I could pick out a turkey, and I would be done with my first fall turkey. As they came through the beans and through the fence, they were in a big cluster. I don't know, there were probably 12 or 15 birds, and they just came storming into the field. It was like a contest to see who could get out there first. I couldn't separate one bird. I had turkey within 5 feet of each side of me, and I was laying down on my belly in the field, and I had another turkey that wasn't 6 or 8 feet in front of me, and he was coming right at me. I was convinced he was going to run right over the top of me, right over my head, full length, and go out by my feet. At just that time, I saw two turkey that pulled off to the left side, and one was about 2 feet in front of the other. I shot that bird. I don't remember any of the rest except that two or three of them hung around and putted and pecked at the one that was flopping on the ground. That's something that turkey always seem to do. You get the impression they don't like each other very much. Here I was. I had two drake mallards and my fall turkey. By the time I stood up and looked around, those ducks, mallards were still, you know, had still been in the field. I didn't see them. I was really happy that I picked up this turkey. And at my gunshot, Pitch started barking. She knew that I didn't go too far away. I carried the turkey back. I took Pitch loose. I thought, I'm going to walk around this ridge. It was about an hour and a half walk. I thought, I'll hunt rough grouse. And by the time I get back, if there's any more mallards flying around, they're probably going to be in my decoys. When I get back, I can pick up my limit mallard. And I'd head to Minnesota. So I walked the perimeter. By the time I got about two-thirds the way around, I had my three-bird limit of rough grouse. And when I was going through a little popple stand, flushed a woodcock, and I shot that, at that patch of popples, there was the last dirt tank that I would walk by. When I stepped up over the bank, this one had a tree laying in the water. There was a flock of wood ducks sitting on the half of them in the tree and half of them on the water. When they flushed, I didn't shoot because I was still confident that there would be a mallard or two sitting in my decoys. We circled around, got back to the tank with my decoys, and there wasn't a bird there. And while I was piling up my birds and gloating over my morning, that flock of wood ducks that I had jumped off that other pond came streaming in to the one I had my decoys on. And I thought, it's early, and I still have plenty of time to go to Minnesota, so I pulled up and I dropped a Drake Woody. This way I could take all my decoys down. Otherwise, I would leave my decoys up there all day, and I would have to climb back up there at the end of the day, hoping that I could pick up my last mallard. And I just knew that this was a really steep ridge, and I really didn't want to have to climb back up there just to pick up a Drake mallard instead of a Drake wood duck. I took the birds down, and I stopped in Stagmeyer's grocery store in Itzen, Minnesota. I bought cold cuts, cheese, a loaf of bread, and they always had potato sacks. They always had a pile of burlap potato sacks, and I think they were a dollar. So whenever I had very many birds, when I stopped for lunch, I would also pick up a gunny sack to store my birds in. And this was definitely a day for a gunny sack. It was really warm this day, so I was concerned about having my birds basting in their own juices all afternoon, so I stopped at a cold water spring along the road, took all my birds down and gutted them, and then put them back in the bag, hoping that would keep them cool. And a couple miles further down the road, it was time to start rough grouse hunting again. I mentioned in my previous rough grouse and rough grouse episode that sometimes my shooting just goes to crap when I cross the state border, and it did this day as well. I hunted hard all day, and I missed a lot. I had plenty of opportunities, but I ended up with two more rough grouse and two more woodcock. I had a few extra bucks at the time, so I decided there was a motel right outside Dorchester on Highway 76. Changed names several times, but I believe it was the Skyline. I believe the manager, the owner then's name was Gene. He was a really nice guy. They were having a hard time making ends meet there. He had a small cafe that was connected to the lobby, like you find in a lot of small towns today. I'd stayed there enough that he knew me, and he knew I was a rough grouse hunter. He'd always told me stories about a fisherman who stopped in there fairly often, and he caught really big trout. All of them were over 20 inches. He'd bring them in to have Gene freeze them for him before he took them home. And he always wanted me to meet the guy, and we just apparently were never there on the same weekend. Well, this time when I went in the lobby, I saw he had quite a few cars out front. So I left all my birds, because he would throw my birds in his freezer too. So I left all my birds in the truck. And when I went in, he greeted me right away, and I saw there was a farm couple with their kids at one table. There was another table with guys dressed up in all their Eddie Bauer clothes, and I knew they were bird hunters. You didn't see very many bird hunters up there. And then there was another table behind the door around the corner that there were two guys sitting at. And when I came in, Gene greeted me right away and said, "I've always told you about Jim, that I wanted you to meet the fisherman Jim, and he's here. He's sitting right over there behind the door. I'm going to introduce you guys, but where are your birds?" Told him, "Well, you've got people in here now, so I just left them out in the truck." And he's, no, bring them in. Bring them in. But no, I said, "It's okay. At least the farm family leave. I don't know how many people want to be eating dinner while you're dragging dead birds through their dining area." But he insisted, so I went back and got my gunny sack. Gene had learned to be quite a showman. When I brought the gunny sack in, he hefted it in the middle of the floor, carried on about, "Oh my gosh, this is really heavy. What have you got in here?" I was kind of embarrassed. I was, "Just put them in the freezer. Just take the sack." He looked inside the sack, and he says, "Oh gosh," he says, Here's a rough grouse," and he took it out and laid it on the floor. "And here's another one," and he laid it beside it. He said, "Well, these other smaller birds, what are they?" And I said, "Well, they're woodcock." And he said, "Well, how many of those are in there?" And I said, "Well, I think there's three." So he reached around, and he found a couple of the woodcock and laid those out, and then he came on another grouse, and he put that grouse on the floor, and then he would heft the bag and look around the room and say, "Boy, it's still heavy. There's still a lot of birds in here." He pulled out a turkey, and he laid the turkey on the floor. And he said, "That's not all. You've still got birds in here." Well, when he got all done, he had a limit of ducks. We were on the point system, two Drake mallards and a Drake wood duck, and obviously the fall turkey. There were five rough grouse and three woodcock. And this table of four guys that were dressed in their natty outdoor gear barely paid any attention at all. When he was done laying all the birds out, one of the guys turned around and he asked, "How many guys are in your party?" And I said, "It's just me." And he said, "Well, you're a little over the limit, aren't you?" And I said, "No, I've never shot over the limit of anything." I said, "I shot three rough grouse in Iowa, and then I drove to Minnesota and I shot the other two up there." I said, "Actually, two rough grouse and two of the woodcock came from Minnesota." And he just turned around again. The guys were at that table were talking about going to town. Turned out there were a group of guys from Des Moines. I got nothing against groups of guys from Des Moines, but one of them stayed behind. He came over and introduced himself to me right away. He said, "Hey, the other guys in my party are talking about going into Waukon. but I'm going to stay. He said, I'd like to talk to you and share hunting stories. Anyway, he went back and sat with his party, but that at this time, I helped Gene put all the birds back in a bag, and he took them back to the freezer, and he introduced me to Jim. I can't remember Jim's buddy's name. Jim was the fisherman, the trout fisherman. He only fished put and grow water. I'd never heard of such a thing. There's put and take. That's where they stock a stream with the intent of you catching them. But they did kind of exploratory work the DNR did, where they stocked small springs that they weren't sure whether or not they would be able to hold fish, trout, cold water species. So they just randomly went around and put fingerlings in these streams, and then some of them they never even surveyed again. And that's what this Jim looked for. And he was pretty good at it. But anyway, I talked to him for a while, and this other guy from Des Moines, we invited him to come over and sit at the table, and the four of us spent hours talking that evening. And it turned out the guy from Des Moines was an attorney, something with the state. He said that it was his position when they had a governor's pheasant hunt on opening day of pheasant season. It was kind of a tradition here. I'm sure it was in the Dakotas and probably Nebraska and Kansas as well. Maybe even, well, I know they do it in Minnesota now, but he said it was his job to walk beside the governor and make sure that every time the governor shot, a rooster fell. And so he said he had to pick out which bird he thought that the governor was going to shoot at and make sure that if the governor missed the bird, that he knocked it down. It was interesting talking to him because he said that he was friends of, I think the guy's name was Milner, who owned Gundog Magazine. And they had a program, a TV program on back at the time, American Sportsman. I mean, it was an original for an upland bird hunting program. He said that they had tried several times to film an episode on rough grouse hunting in Iowa. And he said they never did very good. And well, it ended up I hunted with him the next day. And at the end of the hunt, he asked if it was okay if he talked to Milner, that he was certain that they would want to come up and film an episode with me hunting rough grouse. I was a poor boy then. I was laid off from the foundry. I was driving a piece of crap car. I had no money. I don't know how in the hell I even thought I could afford to stay in a motel. Well, it's only because I didn't own any camping gear. I've tried sleeping in cars, and that's something I've never been able to do. Anyway, I never followed him up on it. I should have. It's not the only advantage or opportunity I've had in my life that I failed to take advantage of. So that was the first time that I took a limit of rough grouse and a fall turkey in the same day. My problem was that I didn't think it was that special. I've since discussed that fact with several of the guys that I used to hunt with. First of all, our cameras were crap. We had Polaroids. We knew nothing about photography, and it just didn't seem noteworthy to take a picture of something that you could go out and do every day. Like, you know, shooting a three-bird limit of rough grouse was not a big deal. I mean, it was fun and it made you confident, but it wasn't an occasion. We did it a lot. And for me, even shooting a five-bird limit of rough grouse in Minnesota, I did it a lot. And I know there are a lot of guys out there that have done it a lot. And that's something I need to mention here. I should have mentioned in my first episode on rough grouse and rough grouse. I am not, and I was not, the greatest rough grouse hunter. I'm not the greatest anything hunter. I'm better than average, or I'm presuming that the average guy's probably never taken a combination limit or a double limit. I could get into some factual information that I looked up on hunters, and I think it was the National Shooting Sports Foundation did a survey. And they determined that the average upland bird hunter only shoots three species of birds in his lifetime. He never shoots a state daily bag limit, and he doesn't expect to ever shoot a state daily bag limit. So I guess, you know, there's nothing wrong with being average. I'm a below average bowler. I'm a horrible volleyball player. I mean, there's a lot of things I'm terrible at, but I am an above average bird hunter. And this doesn't just apply to rough grouse. There are guys that have shot a hell of a lot more pheasants than I have. Sharp-tailed grouse, prairie chickens, all of them. I haven't shot a lot of anything. I've just shot a lot of birds in particular days. Well, like I mentioned, I didn't have much of a camera, I think a Polaroid SX70, and it wasn't one of the best bird hunting days I ever had. It was certainly a good variety, but I didn't take a picture, and I had half my birds gutted already. I don't know what else I can use for an excuse. Then I knew 2 years later, I knew I was moving away. I knew I was going to move to Minneapolis, and it was going to be my last season as a resident in Iowa. So I picked up another fall turkey tag. It was actually late in the season. It was Thanksgiving weekend. I decided that I would try to retake, and I had buried pitch by then. I decided I was going to try to retake that combination limit of rough grouse and fall turkey so I could at least take a picture. Pitch wouldn't be in it, but she was always in it in my memory. There was snow on the ground, and it was horribly cold. I believe that the overnight low was 12 below zero. I hunted Bullwinkle's Ridge because I'd always seen turkey there, and it was a decent area for rough grouse. I trudged around for most of the morning back at the Third Rapids that I picked up two rough grouse. When I was circling back to head to the truck, intending to go to another area, I was going to go to Pinochle Road, I cut two pairs of fresh turkey tracks. I followed them because I'd just been through there 15 minutes earlier and those tracks weren't there. They were heading back towards the river. When I got to the fence line, there was a major timber, and then it thinned down to just the side hill that we always called them wimpy hills, that tapered down to the river bottom. And those wimpy hills were really good for rough grouse. It was just really thick in there. And one set of tracks, the turkey tracks, cut back and went into the bottom in this main timber, and the other set of turkey tracks crossed into those wimpy hills. And I knew they were really choppy. So I thought that if I could catch it in those hills, there'd be a really good chance it would be within range whenever it flushed. And I was thinking big tom turkeys because there were just two tracks here. And if it got through there, it would end up in the river bottom, and that was all like 10 to 12 foot high willow trees. And I knew if it got down there, the chances were really good that it would be in my face flush, because I knew that I would be able to follow its tracks no matter where it went. But I crossed the fence, and I went into those wimpy hills, and when I went over the first ridge, there weren't really ridges, just chop, and I looked down the bottom, and I could see the tracks going up the other side. I went down to the bottom again, but I knew they were really, really fresh. I knew I was really close to this bird. So when I went down to the bottom, and I was carrying my over and under then, I had picked up an old used Superpose 12 with improved cylinder and improved modified chokes. I've never owned a choke tube gun in my life. I don't know if I ever will, but I got nothing against choke tubes, but I don't trade guns. Anyway, I went down to the bottom. I started to work up the other side, and these were really steep and gnarly, but we're not talking about much elevation, probably only 25 or 30 feet in each one of these cuts. Just before I topped out on the second one, I peeked over the top, and I saw there were no tracks going over the other side. So I was relatively certain that this turkey would be sitting in the bottom, not 20 or 25 feet away from me when I raised up. So I stood up, and yep, the turkey was down there, and it flushed. I tried to ride it up a little ways. I really wasn't concerned at this range about killing the thing. But just when it got just above my eye height, I squeezed the trigger, and instead of continuing its flight, the turkey stopped and landed on a tree branch. So I shot right over the top of it. Didn't have to be leading it at all, but who knows. And then when I went to shoot the second time, it took off from the tree branch, and I just barely hit it. Now I'm standing here with an empty gun, but fortunately, it just flew in a short arc and came crashing back down. Now, I was pretty happy that it's not an easy thing trying to shoot a lone turkey in the end of November and when it's 8 inches of snow and 12 degrees below zero. But when I walked over there, I picked it up out of the snow. And as soon as I grabbed its legs, I knew there was something horribly wrong with this bird and I dropped it. I mean, its legs were, I have to think of the correct association. They were really big, like grossly oversized. They were probably the diameter of a ping pong ball or a golf ball. If you've handled many turkeys, you know that's 5 or 8 times larger in diameter than a turkey leg's supposed to be. When I looked at its feet, most of its toes were missing. They were black. Its skin was black. I think that in the cold weather, this bird was so old that it lost circulation and its toes actually froze and broke off. How it managed to balance on that tree branch is beyond me, but it wasn't up there very long. It was a very old bird. Its wattle, it was a hen, but that loose skin on its neck, hens have some loose skin on their necks, it was black and crusty and breaking apart. I managed to force myself to carry it back to the truck, and I threw it in the back of the truck. I drove to Pinochle Road, and I got there, I parked the truck, and when I got out, immediately I saw turkey tracks everywhere, and I hardly ever saw a turkey on Pinochle Road. I don't know if I'd ever flushed turkey on Pinochle Road before. And when I stepped into the timber, there must have been 25 birds all around me. They were flying up into the trees. They were hopping up on brush piles. They were walking around on the ground. There were turkey everywhere. And I thought, all that trailing, all that walking, I mean, I probably walked 2.5 or 3 miles through 8 inches of snow in that circuit that I shot 2 rough grouse and a turkey. And I could have picked up a turkey right here 50 yards from the truck. But obviously, I didn't need a turkey now. So I hunted. And one of the things that I had realized over the years was that rough grouse have a very low social tolerance for turkey. What I'm telling you is, I know that most of you have read ideas, what you would say are unsubstantiated because they didn't come from a biologist, that somehow turkey have a negative effect on rough grouse populations. Well, when you hear it all over the country, I think you have to believe that there's some truth to it. And I've heard most of the stories that a flock of turkey is like a gleaner when they go through the woods. They eat everything and they leave rough grouse with very little to eat, and that reduces their population. And you've heard that they prey on rough grouse eggs and rough grouse chicks. There's two things I can say about that. One of them is, if you've ever watched a flock of turkey chase grasshoppers in a pasture or in a hayfield, and you think that those birds wouldn't have the same prey drive chasing any ground chicks, I think you're kidding yourself. This is early 2020. Just last year, I was hunting rough grouse in Minnesota. And I had an old German guy stop and talk to me. He was hunting rough grouse too. And he told me a story about a lady, a landowner, that he had just talked to the day before. And somehow in our conversation, the topic of rough grouse and turkey came up, because I told him I'd just seen a flock of turkey cross the road. He said, well, he was talking to this lady, and she said that she saw 2 turkey this spring out behind her buildings. And they were stomping around and making all kinds of racket. And she was kind of concerned because she had a barn cat. And she thought that maybe these turkey were fighting with her cat. So she went out to see what was going on. She said when she went out there and the turkeys ran off, she found a grouse nest. And she said almost all of the eggs were broke. She knew that these turkey had broken the eggs. And then she said she went out the next morning. Early morning, she wanted to check and see if the hen came back, and she saw a raccoon there eating up all the broken eggs. So you can think what you want of that, but I'll tell you what my theory is, and it's not a theory for me. I hunted the same cover for rough grouse for 12 or 15 years. I hunted that cover before there were any turkey there. I can still remember the first time I saw a turkey track up there. I couldn't figure out what a crane was doing up there in the woods on top of a ridge. It finally dawned on me that the year before, the DNR had introduced turkey along the Upper Iowa River. When turkey moved in to a cover, the grouse leave. I think it's not only that they leave, they won't go back. They remember what cover has turkey in it, and they avoid it. They'll avoid it to the point where if there was a pocket that I knew there was a flock of turkey using And I was hunting adjacent cover to that, and grouse were being pushed in front of me, you know, on successive flushes. When they got to that edge of the cover that had turkey, I had grouse fly across. They did not land in that area. And all of the other times, the grouse would turn and flush back over me. They would not go into that area that had turkey. I believe that it's because of social tolerance. The principal predator of rough grouse is avian. It's hawks and owls. Turkey roost in trees, the same place that hawks and owls roost. And if a rough grouse wakes up in the morning and he hears all that clattering and wing clapping and ruckus over his head, and there's tree bark and twigs falling down on him, and he looks up there, he's not going to try to figure out, is this a hawk? Is this an owl? Or is this a turkey? He's going to get the hell out of there, and he will not go back. I saw that so many times for so many years that even when the turkey weren't in that cover that they typically were in, if I hunted through a cover and two hunts ago there was a flock of turkey in there, and last hunt there was a flock of turkey in there, but this time I go through and there's no turkey in there, there still aren't any rough grouse there. And it got to the point where in very few years, I'm talking a matter of 3 or 4 years, it went from grouse in every cover to hardly any grouse at all, anywhere. And I talked to Terry Little was a, I don't know if he was the woodland bird, I think he was the woodland biologist. I think he was also, I know he was over grouse and turkey, and I think he was deer too in the Iowa DNR, and this would have been back in the 80s. And when I proposed that to him, I said, and you guys did your initial survey before you stocked turkey. You said that turkey were a species of open hardwood timber, and rough grouse were a species of mostly thick riparian habitat. But I find turkey everywhere. I find as many turkey in the riparian thick habitat as I do in open mature hardwoods. And he said, yeah, we kind of messed up there. We had no idea that turkey would use all of that cover. Initially, when they stocked turkey in Iowa, they estimated that the high population would be between 2,000 and 10,000 turkey, and that's in our entire state, and they weren't certain that they would ever be able to rationalize having a wild turkey hunting season, that the population, because they thought at the time, I think it was that they required at least 10,000 acres of continuous timber, and there were only three places in the state. One of them was northeast Iowa, and it was Shimek Forest and Stevens Forest in southern Iowa were the only three places in the state that could hold populations of turkey. They grossly miscalculated. Virtually every river system, every creek system, and most of the woodlots in Iowa have turkey now. And he admitted that as well, that they were way off on how many turkey they thought the state would hold. I was a member of the Iowa Rough Grouse Society for a couple of years. I went to one of I've been to a couple of the banquets, but I was at another function. It wasn't a banquet, but it was a meeting where a biologist from the Rough Grouse Society was going to speak. And at the end of his talk, I guess this is probably as good a place as any to mention this, but they were doing a kind of a question thing, and there were probably 25 or 30 guys there. One point they asked how many guys, it was in late January, how many guys hunted rough grouse in January? 4 or 5 guys raised their hand. How many of you shot birds? One guy left his hand up. Well, how did you do? He said, I shot one. And everybody was, hey, that a boy. Hey, that's good. Great. And I couldn't stand it any longer. I said, why are we golf clapping over shooting one rough grouse? I said, it wasn't that long ago that a guy could go out and limit routinely on rough grouse. And now it's a big deal to shoot one. I said, my average day was probably, if I was hunting alone, was probably 15 to 20 flushes. I said, if I was hunting with one or two other guys, we were closer to 40 flushes in a day. I said, I know one day we had over 60 flushes. And one of the guys, there's always a smart ass in every group. One of the guys said, well, how damn many grouse do you have to flush to only shoot three? And he kind of pissed me off. And that's when I had to mention that I've shot the three bird limit in Iowa in 45 minutes before. I've shot a three bird limit in Iowa and a five bird limit in Minnesota in the same day twice. I've gone seven straight on rough grouse. I missed the eighth one and the ninth one, I shot its head off. I don't need anyone in this room to talk to me about how many rough grouse you need to see to shoot three. What the discussion is about is what the hell happened? Where did they go? And everybody wants to point to habitat changes. Well, in this area of Iowa, the timber, it was kind of a successional harvest. What a landowner would do is they would log their timber every 10 to 15 years. And when they logged it, it depended on the market. If the market was really good, they would log down, and it was up to the landowner, but they would log down to say, smallest trees they would take would be 12 to 14 inches in diameter. And most of these trees went for railroad ties. In years when the market wasn't very good, then they might only take down to 16-inch trees to let those other 12 to 14-inch trees grow bigger, and hopefully a market would improve. But they would always leave the cull trees. So there were mature trees that were always left behind. So it was always small areas. I mean, 40 acres over here. A quarter of a mile away, they might just log 60 acres. And then on the other side of the road, they might log 80 acres. But this was every 10 to 15 years. So there were always multiple stages of tree growth and undergrowth on every section that held timber. And so there was no major changes. Year to year, at about the time that a timber got so mature that it held very few rough grouse, it got logged again. And when it got logged, they left the tops. Nobody ever cleaned up the tops. So the cover grew back really fast. And if you were in an area that had quite a few pine trees, then the grouse didn't leave when it was logged. Between the tops on the ground for their ground cover and the pine trees, there would be grouse in there even the year after it was logged. Huntable numbers of grouse. I don't mean one or two. I mean huntable numbers. So for somebody to say it's habitat is ridiculous. The habitat hasn't changed. It hasn't changed today, 30 years after there were virtually no rough grouse left in Iowa. 30 years is too long. I moved back here in 93, 92, and the last rough grouse I shot were probably in, I would have to check by at the back of photographs, but there was a weekend that I was going to Northwest South Dakota on Thanksgiving to hunt pheasants and sharptails and fox. And I stopped up at Waukon and hunted a cover, a farm that I hunted forever. And I flushed four rough grouse and I shot three. And they were the last ones that I shot because they were too tame. I knew right away nobody was hunting them anymore. They were three of the easiest shots I ever had at rough grouse. And I thought how quickly they went from being a sporting game bird to being a stupid bird if they just went a few generations with no hunting pressure. And I haven't shot a rough grouse in Iowa since. I flushed two different rough grouse when I was trapping not quite that far north, and it would have been probably 20 years ago. I flushed one on a river bottom, and then about a mile away the next day, I flushed another one on another river bottom. But I'm sure, and it was in December, so I'm sure they were far enough apart that they were two different birds. I would like to take Chaos, my little Springer, up there and hunt for a couple of days and see if I could pick up a rough grouse. But I don't know if the guilt wouldn't overburden the satisfaction of taking a new state species over Chaos. But I've kind of gone off on a tangent again. Initially, I was talking about this biologist from the Ruffed Grouse Society that attended our meeting. At the end of the meeting, he stopped me and he asked me to stay and have a private discussion with him at the end when everyone left. And he told me, I've heard stories about and opinions from hunters about the relationship between the introduction of turkey and the loss of their game birds. He said they talked about it in the Southeast, where they said once turkey were introduced, they lost their quail. He said, I've heard it here in the Midwest. He said, I hear it in Ohio. I heard it in Indiana. He said, I even heard it, and he even specifically asked me not to repeat any of this, but he said that he heard it from mountain quail hunters in Washington and Oregon, that once they introduced turkey, their mountain quail disappeared. He actually requested that I remain a member of the Ruffed Grouse Society. He said, we need people like you. He said, you're not like the rest of the guys in this room. He said, you have a very good understanding of a problem that we're having with ruffed grouse populations, and I don't want you to leave here so frustrated that you won't remain involved. But I did. I did leave there frustrated, and I never renewed my membership in the Ruffed Grouse Society. Actually, at the end of this seminar, I told everyone that if you really want to do some good for ruffed grouse, take the money that you are going to spend on habitat and buy turkey tags, specifically fall turkey tags, and hand them out like candy and encourage everyone to shoot as many mature turkey hens as they possibly can, because that's the only way you're going to get our grouse back. And most of them laughed, and I meant it somewhat in jest, but it's, in my opinion, if you want ruffed grouse, you do not want turkey. You can have turkey for Thanksgiving, but you can't have turkey and ruffed grouse both. But here we are back on Pinochle Road, and I have two ruffed grouse and my fall turkey, and I just walked into a flock of a bunch of gimme turkeys that I could have taken with a slingshot, and I walked the whole south side of this cover. You know, the side that had the turkey hen, and I didn't flush a single grouse. But I crossed to the north side, which was, there was a kind of a pine plantation. It was probably only a couple acres, but these white pine were planted in nice even rows. And occasionally, it was kind of thick around the outside edges of it. And occasionally, I would say once out every four or five times I walked through that stand, I would actually flush a grouse. There were very, very seldom there were any in there. But on this hunt, I was working my way along a logging road going to that cover, and I flushed a grouse out of a really thick corner that had been logged about 5 or 8 years ago. I managed to knock him down, and I had a repeat of the three-bird limit, a ruffed grouse, and a fall turkey in the same day. I spent a considerable amount of time trying to take a picture, but you know it's really hard when you have that much snow on the ground to find some place where you can place your birds without disturbing all the snow around it, making tracks all over, knocking it off the branches, so it doesn't look completely staged. I think I did a pretty good job of it, and I also positioned, I left some weeds sticking up in front of the turkey, and I maneuvered the camera so I was certain that they covered up its gross legs and feet. And the part of its, you know, to me it was still a wattle, even if it was a hen bird, but the really gross parts of the bird were covered up by weeds and stems, because I didn't want to explain to anybody what the hell was wrong with that turkey I shot. I can mention here, I took it home. When I went to clean it, I breasted it out, and its entire breastbone was black. All the bones I saw in the body were black. I'm relatively certain that would have been cancer. I don't know what else it would have been, but there was no way that I could eat that bird. Not after seeing that gross carcass and black bones, I had to toss it out. And that's my confession on wanton waste. Now, I've never attempted to retake, and I have no intention of attempting to retake a combination limit of fall turkey and rough grouse, but I have done a little bit of rough grouse hunting in the North Woods. It's different, mostly bird number-wise. I don't see near the number of birds up there that I was accustomed to in the South. Oh, I could mention that. I spoke with Bill Berg. He was the rough grouse biologist in Minnesota for at least a short period of time, rough grouse and sharp-tail grouse. And in a conversation with him, he suggested that I go up and hunt Mille Lacs because he thought that that year they had particularly good rough grouse numbers there. And he wanted me to hunt that area and then call him when I got home and let him know what I thought of their good northern rough grouse hunting. I know when I got back, I think I hunted 2 days, and I either shot 5 or 7. I don't remember. And he thought that was really good. He said, well, for someone who's never hunted up there before, he said, that's good hunting. That's good numbers. And I told him I could have shot twice that many hunting in Iowa on the Iowa-Minnesota border. And Bill told me, you shouldn't expect to shoot as many grouse up north as you do in the south. Our best grouse populations are in the south, which to me was a pretty startling admission. I did talk to Gordon Gullion, too. He was at a book signing at Berger Brothers Sporting Goods in Minneapolis when I lived up there. And I tried to explain to him the difference that I saw between drum counts in the north and drum counts in the southeast and the populations. And the only thing that I left with was he had an excuse for every positive indicator of rough grouse in the southeast. He said they had a higher drum count because the roads were more accessible. I don't know how that could be. If they're having stop locations within earshot of previous or post locations, then that's just plain poor planning. And I could understand where that might happen in 1 or 2 years of their initial years of establishing listening posts. But I don't know how anybody attempting to conduct professional survey could let that happen over a period of years. And when I talked to him about the number of birds that we shot, he said that was because our grouse hunting was easier. Our shot opportunities were easier in the southeast than they were in the North Woods. And there's some truth to that. If you don't hunt logging roads, like 95% of the people who hunt in the North Woods hunt logging roads, because we didn't have that in northeast Iowa.
Or southeast Minnesota.
There were very, very few lanes that went through timber. When we hunted timber, we hunted the thickest, heaviest growth we could find on the shoulder of ridges. And there might be a cow trail, or there might be a deer trail. Probably 80% of the cover we hunted had no trails. Obviously, I knew that Gordon Gullion had never walked those woods. He had an opinion based on topographic surveys, but he didn't walk those woods. And I'm not saying that. I'm telling you, I have hunted the North Woods. And when you get in those thick tag alder, swampy morasses of cover, yes, that's tough. And shooting grouse in there is tough. But shooting grouse at all of the angles that we had to shoot them at in the southeast was tough as well. But lastly, Gullion's reasoning for concentrating on the North Woods was because that's where the most public land was. He said, this is the land that we have access to study. He said, there isn't enough public land in the southern part of the state for us to manage enough cover to determine what the effects are. And I said, well, that's easy. Just buy more land down there. That's me talking. He laughed. Well, I've done about enough biologist bashing on this podcast.
I think it's time for me to sign off. I'd like to mention the next podcast is going to be on sharp-tailed grouse in Nebraska and sharp-tailed grouse in South Dakota. Following that will be a podcast on sharp-tailed grouse and pheasants in South Dakota. And then it'll be ruffed grouse and woodcock in Minnesota. This is Randy Shepherd with My Dog Hunts. Thanks for listening.